Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, waving through his apartment window, Williams.
Hey, it's still quarantine, kinda.
We got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about the recent, or actually, upcoming released musical hit film, and that is Dear Evan Hansen. And of course, what musical opportunity would we be missing out on if we didn't bring operatic extraordinaire Miss Musical Genius herself, intern slash part-timer slash stenographer Amy?
Oh, that's a very wordy and aggressive.
I'm sorry.
Title
weren't you guys weren't you guys the ones who headed the last time we did a musical adaptation?
Operatic?
With Shrek the Musical?
Yeah, that was a while back.
And it just last year.
Was it?
During the pandemic.
Oh,
that feels like 2 years ago.
I thought it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. Sorry, Seton Foster.
Well, we got
and
a great
Darcy James. We love you.
We got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about this film. We got a chance to see it in an early screening, and we are excited to talk about it. So before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We got over 200 episodes, all brimming with just great information. I mean, you can check us out. We got everything from anime to action to Marvel to DC. We got it all. Also, if you want to check out more of our episodes wherever you are, check out all anywhere where you stream podcasts, whether if it's Google Play, Libsyn, Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, everywhere we are there. We are excited to talk about this movie, especially since the fact that the movie hasn't dropped yet and we got a chance to check it out. But nevertheless, everybody here at this table are fans of musicals when it comes to, you know, either film or stage. So we're excited to get into this. And that is 2021's Dear Evan Hansen. This film is a what? Go ahead.
No, Amy, I'm good.
You were literally about to say something.
No, actually, I was trying to readjust so I could watch Spencer do that synopsis-y goodness.
Oh, she's just positioning herself so she can have a better view.
Yeah.
Apparently, this is going to be really good. So,
I don't know why. It's the same old story.
We all of us at the table are actually fans of the original musical and all the music entailed in there.
Fan is a very strong word.
Okay,
for
we're
me.
Familiar. Is that better for
yes.
you?
Yes,
okay. We appreciate.
As you can tell, this conversation is going to go in a specific direction. So before we dive into that, Spencer, why don't you give us the official synopsis goodness?
Evan Hansen is a young man beset by social anxiety disorder. He's ordered by his therapist to write self-addressed motivational letters to himself in order to improve his disposition and communication skills. After one of these missives is stolen by a classmate who takes his own life, the deceased parents believe it to be a genuine note intended for Evan, who integrates himself with the family. As this relationship deepens, he begins to truly understand what it means to belong.
Directed by Stephen Chbosky, from the screenplay by Stephen Levinson, the film stars Ben Platt, Amy Adams, Julianne Moore, Caitlin Dever, Amanda Steinberg, Nick Dodani, Danny Pino, Cotton Ryan, and Demarius Copes. This is actually the first Pasek and Paul musical to be adapted to film from the stage. And with that, this another unique thing aspect about it is that Ben Platt and Colton Ryan, who respectively play Evan and Connor, I almost called him again, Connor, are the only two members from the original Broadway cast, Ryan being an understudy in that production, to return for the film. When you see the film, you can kind of tell right away who's got the stage experience, I guess you could say. because it's very obvious at that point in time. But like I said, we're excited to talk about this film. We got a chance to check it out at our local theaters. And interestingly enough, it sounds like, because we haven't had a real solid opportunity to dive deep into what we think about it. So this will be interesting because I can already tell Spencer's got thoughts.
I got some thoughts. I got some opinions. That's why I'm on this podcast.
Yeah.
It's true. That is
not why. For the love of film, for thoughts and opinions.
Oh, well, it's good to know that that's where the line is drawn. There we go. Like I said, we are all actually here. We've actually all seen the musical in one form or another. And we're familiar with musicals in general. I think it's safe to say that with Spencer's, I don't know, emergence as a musical fan within the last couple of years.
Very strong words.
You know what?
He's an optimist. I kind of appreciate that. Him trying.
I'm trying to give him credibility in this show. He's just bombing it every 5 seconds. I'm like, and Spencer could do that. Not really. And Spencer says he could do. Nope, not even close. And it's like, come on.
Hey, I'm a realist.
Which okay. is funny because he's a realist too. I'm the optimist in this group. Ahoy.
Ahoy. Okay.
Optimism ahoy.
Optimism ahoy.
So I think, okay, out of the three of us here, one of the big reasons, and I did mean it, Amy is probably the most knowledgeable when it comes to musicals that I know of.
I had a problem. I like theater. Where else can you sing and be really aggressively expressive on stage and people call it normal?
In an insanity institute.
There's not a stage for you in there. Thank you.
Your room. I mean, come on. Anyway, the world's a stage. Haven't you ever heard that saying?
Do not give me strutting across the stage over there, Hamlet. Calm down.
Give ye. So you, Amy, have been and this is a term of endearment, but a theater nerd.
Yep, or a theater geek.
Or a theater geek. For a good amount of time since high school up until as of late, even just being a fan of it.
Yeah.
So what
prior to high school as well, but that's where we're up. I'm allowed to put my little flag. Ding, 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 flag. Go. Keep going. Sorry.
So your knowledge in musicals, it's pretty vast. Even before we were starting the show, I kind of had to curtail a conversation that was going off into another direction because I know how this podcast operates, and too many thoughts really derail the focus of the show.
Yep.
But you were actually talking about another musical prior to this. So you're
three of them at the same time, kind of badly. Yeah. Yeah. Keep going. Me, what I do.
I feel like I'm just going to hand this over and just, you know.
No, keep talking, please. I can't.
Exactly.
I can't. this is not safe. Don't let me.
So, with your experience, when was the first time you had heard about Dear Evan Hansen?
So 2014. It has been out for quite a bit. I believe 2017 when they made it to Broadway, they ended up earning a couple of Tonys. They were nominated for quite a few, but they won for Best Song, I believe, and Best Book. So I had heard about them and I was aware of them. When they first did their kind of circuit for morning television, thank you, Good Morning America, in bringing Broadway to people's homes.
True. Yeah. They do a lot of their performances on there.
So much like the music that was playing under that official synopsis goodness, Waving Through a Window, of course, a younger Ben Platt at the time actually came out and did that on the Today Show, and I remember seeing it and I was like, I'm sorry, what's the kid from Pitch Perfect doing in this? And yeah, there you go.
So you knew Ben Platt from Pitch Perfect before you even saw Dear Evan Hansen?
Mm-hmm. So in Pitch Perfect,
it's hard to say, isn't
it? Pitch Perfect. He was actually the outsider magician kid in the very first one.
Have you seen that movie, Spence?
No.
Good on you.
Good. Go ahead. He hates it. So I have literally been told I hate it. Oh, so much. So,
Hold on. Pause. Time out. It's not the movie I don't like.
You don't like Rebel Wilson.
I already know that before we even talked about it.
I have nothing against the movie. If there was a variation of the movie that didn't have Rebel Wilson in it, I'd be all about it. I would watch the heck out of that first one.
The first one's actually really entertaining.
And it has Rebel Wilson. Yeah. So, no.
I mean, you can avoid her like by just enjoying the...
No, you can't avoid Rebel Wilson. Rebel Wilson is everywhere when she's there.
You know, it'd be fun screen. If they like...
that was a very long
you
pause.
You could just make a version of that movie that just has her like cut out of it.
That's a lot of rotoscoping. I don't have time for that. Okay?
Yes, you do.
Just like...
he's got a lot of time.
24 frames per second and we're talking about an almost hour and a half, 2 hour movie. No, thank you.
Almost, he says.
Either way. So when it comes to the unique aspects of well, let's just talk about Ben Platt for a second. Mm-hmm. Ben Platt is actually the son of a really well-known producer, isn't he?
I don't know. I was just going to be honest. Like, so here's the thing.
Ben Platt is the son. Ben Platt is the son of Mark Platt. Mark Platt's been in like theater, film. He's been in
the
TV.
The Legally Blonde musical and Into the Woods. Spencer, we've got some connections. There you go. And Wicked.
Oh my God. Okay.
So there you go. Sorry. Okay, now I'm done.
I don't think you are. So like he's been around for a good amount of time. Mark Platt himself has been in the industry for a while. So it's kind of cool to see that his son jumped into that, especially when he was a part of the Dear Evan Hansen movement and everything that was going on in terms of musicals around that time, American musicals specifically. So Ben Platt, I believe at the time was like early 20s.
He's 27 right now. He's not even 30. So yeah, if he's for Dear Evan Hansen. So 2015, yeah. 2014, 2015. Who's good at math? Cause I'm not. Spencer?
Wait, what?
Are you good at math?
Wait, no.
27.
Yeah.
And it's 2015.
So that's what? Minus 6 years, 21.
Okay.
There you go.
Spencer with the math.
Benjamin Platt, though. Ben Platt has a very unique voice. Just talking about the actor himself, I actually do appreciate the way he sings on stage. Just talking about from the musical perspective. I've always enjoyed the way he sings. I like the way he utilizes like that falsetto. Talking a little bit in like musical terms, he utilizes his like main voice with his falsetto and it kind of comes in and out, and it's really unique. It's kind of like vocal gymnastics that he does. It's really great.
Yes, he does.
So when this musical came out, when I was first introduced to the musical, I wasn't too sure what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like when you hear the plot of it, you're like, okay, this is gonna be unique. And then you watch it and you get halfway through the musical and you're like, okay, it has to be done. You can't really get any further than this. And then it
there's more.
It turns into the tornado from The Wizard of Oz at the second half and just, you know, blows everything away in terms of just the chaos and everything that happens in the film. I'm not talking about it being bad. I'm saying, or in the musical. The second half is really, really tough to watch at times.
Which it's supposed to be.
So I actually first saw the musical last year or the year before. It was the year before.
Okay. So 2020. Pandemic.
Pre-pandemic.
So 2019.
Yeah. That's what I said. The year before. What about you, Spence? Because I know you actually went to see it last year.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
Which I actually think we
had this conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say, you both actually went to the same...
Well, not the same show.
Not the same show, but...
But we were literally... one night apart. Like, I think you saw it first, and I saw the following night, and I was like, oh, where were you?
Yeah, so... I didn't, like... This was, like, a thing where my mom was like, oh, we should go to the musical and do things this year. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, fine. I support you.
COVID saved you, what you're saying. No. The introvert has been saved.
No, it was just 2019, wasn't it?
No, this was 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was early 2020. It was right before everything closed. That's right.
So like, I was like, okay, let's like family fun night. Let's do that at a musical. So I didn't bother to look up what this movie like was about. So like, as we got into it, like I was like, oh
no, I don't think I can do this at all. Yeah. Because I was already looking for the exit and at the clock by the time that, like, they're at the dinner table with Evan. And I'm like, that's...
And that's still within, like, the first 30 minutes of the whole musical. Not even 20 minutes.
No, it's so early and there's so much time left after that. And it was...
There was so much more stuff.
Like,
because it's like what? Like a, almost in terms of the musical, the musical is like the
two
musical.
2 hours and some change. You have an intermission that's usually a 20 to 30 minute intermission.
That intermission.
That's where you stretch
painful.
And you run.
I was like, let's go.
You're like, so, you're like, so, first act's over. We're good. Intermission.
Yeah, like, we're when good. It was up, I was like, that's an intermission. I'm like, what? How? How?
The best part is because we got to see the movie together. He went to the bathroom right at the end of Act One, where the intermission would have been, and I was like, "I'm so proud of you, so proud of you, right there."
Oh, how was your experience watching it?
So it was. I knew about Dear Evan Hansen. I had seen Waving Through a Window. I purposely, after reading the synopsis, I was like, "This is a." For Paul and Pasek, who are the writing duo behind this, most listeners may know them from La La Land or The Greatest Showman, of course. Hmm. This was a little heavy and a little dark, and I was like, I don't think I'm ready for this. I don't think I'm ready. I can't go, man. So watching it, I was like aware of certain beats in it. It was performed really well, but I was just like, ugh. Oh. Yeah. It was. It gave you... If you ever want to feel uncomfortable in your seat, that musical, ooh,
this is it.
That musical got you by the no-no bits.
That's one of the questions, like, right from the bat, like, the idea of actually moving forward with creating a film adaptation of this particular musical was a very, like, risky move, mm-hmm. because you're talking about, as we've mentioned, obviously, if you haven't seen it on Broadway, or you haven't seen it on YouTube, or if you haven't, like, torrented it online, or you haven't, everybody, I mean, you should already know the majority of the story. We're not going to get into too many of the spoilers, but we are going to talk about a few things that are not common in the movie, or the musical itself. But you're taking a movie, you're taking a musical that is very heavy in the idea of, like, suicide and, dare I say, like, pathologically lying, you know, and like,
and the impact of social media on your psyche and yeah. and mental health, and it is a heady brew of topics that are put on a plate for you to ingest, which sometimes the question comes, is it better in a theater to have that experience as community or being by yourself watching it on a film?
Well, and that's the thing, like, that was, I think, the question on everybody's mind when the trailer dropped. Like, oh, we're making Dear Evan Hansen into a movie. And you're like, why? You know, because it's like, after everything we talked about, to pack all of that, not only into a film, but into a consumable amount of time in a film. Like, mind you, the movie's only 2 hours and 17 minutes long, which is still a long time. But compared to, like, when you're sitting in a theater and how it just feels like when it's just drawn out, like, those uneasy moments and those tense moments, and it just makes, like, 2 minutes turn into, like, 10.
This movie was literally 10 hours.
It
you were there were signs even in the dark theater that I knew Spencer was uncomfortable.
So
when I brought him up and you were like, wait a minute,
get the heck out of here.
Let's talk, first off, let's talk expectations. We're all aware about the musical. So what were some of your expectations? I want to start with you, Spence, coming into this movie. Aside from you being salty that I had to drag you to an actual inside theater.
Again, I was not salty.
That was a fun car ride home, by the way. Just trying
yeah,
to...
Yeah,
Spencer, are you...
That theater was fairly...
Empty.
Empty, yeah. So...
Except for the one person that was coughing in the last act. And I could feel Spence tense up.
No. See, here's the thing you don't realize. I didn't even hear that. Because so much was happening in this movie where I was just like, I want to leave.
So expectations, because I want to get to first impressions.
Okay, right. Like, again, expectations, since I already seen this, I kind of knew what I was walking into, which was kind of 2 hours of torture.
Were you hoping for anything? Like, maybe hoping for changes in storyline or changes in plot points? Or was there anything that you were... hoping to see out of this adaptation.
Like, the only hope was that, like, maybe Ben Platt wouldn't lean into the awkward moments as hard. But no, he did.
Okay. Yeah. Why do you look like you're gritting your teeth over there?
I'm not. I'm trying actively not to.
You have a tendency to go beyond expectations and jump right into your thoughts. Shall I rewind last week's or that last episode that we did with you? Like,
go beyond plus ultra. Hello.
What were some of your thoughts prior to expectations?
So much like Spencer, having seen the musical, I was hoping some of the casting would come off differently, not pertaining to Ben Platt as it was. The questions of the hair had been circulating the interwebs for so much time that expectation I kind of tried to not be a jerk about. Mm-hmm. But when it came to Julianne Moore, who I traditionally do not like, I was hoping that she wasn't going to stink it up as Evan's mom. And the other one that I was excited to see how she translated was the actress who played Alana. But we know her from Rue. We know her as Rue from The Hunger Games.
Also, she was in The Hate U Give. She's been in a couple other things outside of that. But yes, one of her big breaks was playing Rue in the first
Hunger Games. So I just wanted to see how this translated. I didn't have an expectation of a change in storyline, because usually when it comes to movie musicals, they try to stick as close to the book as possible, because they want to create that continuity, much like the 7 versions of Les Mis that are out, including, like, if you watch them in concert, or Phantom of the Opera. They try to be consistent. So I had no expectations that they were going to divert the original play for their own devices. You're making weird faces.
Are you talking about your lack of expectations or any of your
I tried to be nice and come in with minimal expectations, except for I don't like Julianne Moore, so please don't break it.
So coming into it with an open mind, essentially.
Trying, yes.
So one of the biggest things I really wanted to make sure was that we're a movie podcast. We review movies.
Yep, that's the point.
Yes, thank you. Only took you a couple years to figure that one out.
Only a couple.
We're a movie podcast. So, like, looking at this, I had to, just like with, like, Shrek the Musical, which I wasn't on that episode, but, like, in the mindset of reviewing it, I have to take that step back and think objectively as we are reviewing a quote-unquote movie. In whatever aspect this musical gets translated, I'm still going to see this as a film. Unlike things like Hamilton or even Shrek the Musical to an extent, those were filmed stage musicals. Mm-hmm. But then you get things like Into the Woods, which is a musical translated into a movie.
Which or also Les Mis. Has a filmed stage. So those do also have a film stage
adaptation. I'm talking about the Disney one, the recent one. Yeah,
the one with James Corden, which you do not like.
I don't like James Corden.
Yeah, I know who's on your do not like list.
Yes,
we've got two so far. If I can get a couple more out, we can put them on the list and then be like, you got to watch these movies.
So I think that was one thing. I think the hair thing was a really big thing, because every time I saw the trailers, I literally saw just Ryan Reynolds from Just Friends. The beginning of that movie when he's got the curly hair.
In the fat suit.
In the fat suit. So I was trying not to let that bother me. I didn't want it to be a issue or something that came up throughout this movie. I didn't want it to be something that was going to, you know, keep my focus and not enjoy or not try to enjoy the film that we were watching. But as we come to talk about first impressions, obviously that may not have been the case. Spencer, first impressions right after you got out of the theater.
This movie. Like, it just starts and it doesn't stop. Like, I truly can only handle a tiny amount of, like, social awkwardness in a movie.
Yeah.
This movie surpasses it. Like, my limit.
Of social awkwardness.
Yeah, so quickly that, like, I'm constantly looking for the exit and just like, come on, talk faster, Evan. We gotta go. We gotta get out of here.
Well, I don't think we wanted him to talk too fast. He was gonna be unintelligible because there were.
That's fine. Like that means we're out of here.
Amy, first impressions aside from what you're seeing on the phone.
Thanks. No, I was listening. The act of listening. Okay, thank you. First impressions. Woof. Yeah. It is still as heavy as it was, and Julianne Moore didn't entirely butcher the song that makes me sob uncontrollably. So there was high points, there was low points, but to quote the person who came as a plus one to somebody who had seen the musical and the guest had not seen the musical, was not aware, went in blind. Mm-hmm. That's a really sad movie. That is it, what she walked over to the studio rep and goes, she goes, can I tell you my comment? And he's like, yeah. She goes, that's a really sad movie.
See, I felt bad. So
here, and I was just like, yep.
Here in this accurate region for press screenings, we have a studio rep who comes to all of the press screenings. And
he's the nicest dude ever.
He's great. Cool. Shout out to Terry. Terry is a great guy. You know, if he ever gets a chance to hear this, I hope he knows. We appreciate him 100 times over because he's just a great guy. I feel totally like an idiot because I had to go bathroom as soon as the movie was done. And I just ran past him like, hey, Terry. He goes, oh, hey, what'd you think? And I'm like, it was good. I got to go. Just like I could have unloaded on the man and just really kind of gave him some thoughts. But I'm like, either I go bathroom or he sees the worst of me. That's all I'm saying. Because I had to go. Don't look again? At me like that.
Oh, I don't know. Sorry. It was another hour.
Again?
So you went at
we
the
were in there for 2 hours.
You went at intermission.
Yeah, I did.
holding up the grand tradition of theater. He went at intermission. You hold it till the end.
This movie took what was the musical variation of Dear Evan Hansen, the stage production, and tried to squeeze not every aspect of the musical, but every aspect of the emotional emotional plot points of the musical and just beat you with it. Like,
and with new added songs, beat you with it. Yeah. They wrote two brand new songs for this movie.
Oh yeah, the second one I don't. Oh, it was the variation of the one where he's at the tree.
The Closer to Today. So there's two new songs. This is not really spoilery that are in this movie.
I only know the anonymous ones.
So the anonymous ones is one that helps build out Alana's character, which we'll talk about that. Yes. Yeah. We'll talk about that. And then the other one is actually a song that Connor sings that we don't find out until the end of the movie, because you're hearing it play and you're like, what? And then it takes a pivot on what the musical does for completion versus what the movie does.
Yeah.
But there's two shiny new songs to beat you over the head with and make you feel more.
Yeah.
And Spencer's like, nope.
So just diving head first into this, let's just jump right in. And you were mentioning actors. Obviously, one of the biggest obvious ones is Ben Platt. Ben Platt playing the key role way back when the musical first hit the stage. Ben Platt, yes, he's an amazing singer, but he should have stepped aside for someone else in this one. Like, I love his singing. Mm-hmm. I think he's great. I just feel like there's a lot of stage and theater training that was what we were seeing in the movie theater. And I think it was just kind of a little bit too much. I think he was just tapped more into the musical stage performance of his character rather than a film performance, where if you take a look at any theater, any movie performance, it's subtle. It's not obvious. It's very like it tiptoes in. You are given pieces of what makes this person them throughout the film to pretty much, as an audience member, create the puzzle that is this character. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. This movie, much like its theatrical or theater counterpart, used every heavy-handed theater opportunity, you know, theater trick and trope to make sure you knew, number one, Evan was a very neurotic boy. He was very, you know, anxious. He had issues and he struggled with self-esteem. And right from the get-go, you knew he struggled with just his own existence, period. And that's within the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think for people who weren't aware of the story or the musical element of this film, like the actual musical, I think giving that a little breath and giving it a little space for him to reveal himself as time goes on to kind of get the picture of, okay, all right, this is what makes Evan Hansen, this is what makes him whatever, I think would have been a little bit more, would have been a little less lighter, I guess. It would have been more palatable, I guess. I don't know if you guys get what I'm saying. Like, I felt like the jittery, the shaking, the rambling, all the things that he was doing in the first 5 minutes, I saw him do that on stage in the musical. And it made sense because it's a stage performance. You need to be that much more outlandish. You need to be that much more obvious so that the people in the far back can see this is what he's trying to impose on the audience. This is what he's trying to show. And I feel like in this case, everybody had the front row seat to this musical. Everybody could see everything from the, you know, from the facial movements to the eyes to the, you know, to the sweating to, you know, the awkwardness. Everybody had that front row perspective as if they were in the movie, as if they were in the theater, stage theater. So I don't know. I felt like it was a little bit over the top. I felt like some of the elements just, I don't know. I really do feel like Ben Platt wasn't the strongest performer of this film. I don't know. What do you guys think? Spencer?
I'm trying to process what you said.
I can pass it over to Amy and give you some time.
No.
Like I don't know if you want extra time to...
That's not going to help.
Okay. therein lies the question.
See, the thing is, for me at least, I feel like Ben Platt was trying to be like that over the top on purpose, because for me, I think it got the desired effect of like how awkward Evan is, because it's just, it's astronomical. It's like impossible to really understand unless you're watching this movie how awkward and nervous this kid is, because I kind of feel like that he was going just to try, like, you know, I'm going to slam this out of the park. And that's where he landed. And because you're kind of asking a question of, is that too much? And I don't know if it is.
What about you, Amy? What do you think?
Well, so
And mind you, real quick, taking into consideration, yes, musical performance, Ben Platt, and, you know, on stage, it makes sense. I'm talking, though, like in the mindset of it being on screen, you literally being from the perspective of where it's being shot to how you're seeing it, you're literally feet away from him. Whereas opposed to, and Amy, I think you can attest to this, when you are acting, when you're on stage, when you're in a theater production, you have to over exaggerate certain things or do certain things. So that way things are translated all the way to
the back of the house. So that concept is used in relation to your tone, to your performance, as in your body movement. And in this, it comes more to a question of you, like for you, Eddie, of the believability in his illnesses, his plural illnesses. There are people that I know that there were tics that I saw in the movie that were small tics that, unless you had been watching him do a performance when he was on stage, they were the same tics. But the sweating, the jitter, there's a sequence for the, and I keep calling it the act one finale because that's what it is in the musical, which is You Will Be Found, where he is visibly shaking, and it is not anybody but him actually shaking. Ben Platt has come out and talked about that he had a lot of trauma that he had to reopen to get back into the mindset for Evan Hansen that he had not finished processing the first time he had gone through it.
Are we talking in terms of on the musical or in this movie?
So for the movie. So he had things that he had created for the musical that he was able to kind of control, and he's worked through some of his mental illnesses, and then coming back into the movie and having such harsh criticism of him being that he should have stepped aside, that he was overacting, that they didn't feel that he's right for the part, and that if people have come out and openly attacked him, he's been very honest about that. He's like, look, I did the role that, you know, I originated. They asked me to come in and do it. I went in willingly, and I reopened a lot of issues that I had that I never got over from high school in doing this. So I know people, which so the believability of the performance comes into question of if you're going, if the theater, you have to dispense your belief. You come in the theater. It's part of the tradition, going to musical, going to theater. You give up, or you don't give up, but you give up, you willingly give up your realistic expectations. You're going to see a movie about, or a musical about Peter Pan. You know, in real life, these people do not fly, but for the music, the purpose of the musical, they do. And you believe, you give yourself that space to believe, and you enjoy it. Film does takes away some of that you are, it's you in the screen. You're experiencing it, but you're not experiencing it as a community.
The idea of a movie is you are seeing the perspective that the director wants you to see. First and foremost, when you see any movie, the first thing you are watching is, and this is from the movie side, it's not from the stage side, but from the film side, you are watching, first off, the variation that the director wants you to see of this character. Every nuance, everything else that you glean from it after the fact is residual. But the idea, the base idea of a film is this is the interpretation of the director that is intended for the viewer to see. So when I'm watching this movie, to be quite frank, yes, there's a sense of believability that has to be there, because the sense of disbelief, it has to be minimized for a movie like this, because you're talking about somebody who's suffering through certain mental illnesses, certain, you know, types of, you know, disadvantages, differences, you
neuroses,
know.
Yeah.
And so when you're looking at that in that element, there are certain ways that you have to portray it to where, number one, you don't overdo it or ham it up to where it's unintelligible, or it's only recognizable to the niche few who understand that theater side and are like, oh yeah, because blah, 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 this, this, and that. It's like, I hate going to this, but it's the truth. It's like the DC fan base when it comes to certain types of movies, and I've used this analogy several times before, but Spence and I, you and I know people, I'm pretty sure Amy, you know people too, who are like, oh, well, you know, you have to rewatch this one because this does this and this and that, and it homages
Martha.
This and
that. Martha.
All of the above.
It's not like I do a comic book podcast. So let's put this in the place. If you hadn't seen the musical, would you believe that he's just over the top twitchy and it makes you uncomfortable?
It has just, nothing. It's not that. It's not the, question. No. So here's the thing.
Because it's the question, not the element. I'm not asking if
so was it a rhetorical question? Because I was about to answer.
Let's see you. Go for it, buddy.
Because here's the thing. If I hadn't seen the musical, I 100% would have thought this was a little too over the top. I would have thought this was from somebody who objectively, because yes, whatever the actor is going through and all that, that's, to be quite frank and to be a little cold, that's not my problem. My issue is to review the actual piece that we saw. Whatever he experienced after the fact, that's not a part of what I saw in the film. If I were to take all those other things into account, then I'd have to take everything else that went into account with every other film that went out there. Like, oh, I have to give grace for this one because the actor after that stubbed his toe and did this, blah, blah, blah.
I'm not asking for grace. I'm asking if you believe him in the acting that he did for his neuroses. There are people that do that. That it's not... There are so many ticks that are the director... Because film is from the director's perspective.
So if there's people who are suffering... So here's... And this goes to this age-old question that everybody asks when it comes to film. If you have a role that people can actually fill truly with all earnestness, why not cast those people? That's what I'm saying, is that, yes, I get it. It's the performance. It's the whatever he did that made the musical such great. And I'm not negating Ben Platt's ability. I'm not negating his obvious God-given talent of singing so beautifully. I mean, the man is an angel. I just talked about it at the beginning of the episode. I love the way he sounds. I love the way he sings. The thing is, when it comes to reviewing a movie based on something that is supposed to, because this isn't 10 years ago, this isn't 15 years ago, this isn't even 5 years ago, everything is progressive and movies have to be that same way. And if we're looking at that, it's like going to the extent of people who, there are a lot of people who are upset when they cast Leonardo DiCaprio for playing Gilbert in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. You know, there are a lot of different elements where people are like, well, why don't you just use this? If you're going to use the reasoning that, well, he's trying to make it believable, blah, 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 then why not just have somebody who is already, who already has that as their real life? You know, it's difficult debating with people about method acting in certain aspects, like things like that. Something so like instrumental to a movie, to a story, that you have to say, oh, well, you know, they're doing this for this. They have to do it like this because they're trying to do this, or they're trying to do that for that. You know, when
maybe the director is just trying to make you uncomfortable.
It wasn't about, well, so for me, it wasn't uncomfortable. It just was kind of over the top. And that's kind of where I sat it at. Like, that's, for me, it was like, I kind of see where they're coming from, but also at the same time, being, like I said, being that close to seeing all those things that I would typically see from a further distance, it seemed a little over the top. That's really where I left it at. I earnestly feel like Ben Platt, as great of a guy he is, I felt like it was kind of a miscast for this movie.
Okay.
But talking about other actors, though, that weren't really miscast, you were talking about the actress who played Alana.
Amandla
Stenberg,
mm-hmm.
Which, like you mentioned earlier, had a really unique start in film with her role in Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
I think she did really well giving more credence to Alana. I felt like her role seemed to add more to that aspect of the story. It didn't overlay too much of, you know, needing to be constant attention or whatever, how like it was in the musical. In the musical, it just seemed like she was always making efforts to be visible, whereas in this one, she just wanted to be a part of. I don't know, what do you think,
Spencer?
Well, to be perfectly honest, the things with Alana in the movie versus the theatrical version, she's much better here and much more palatable, mostly because I feel like it's a two-sided thing where it's like part of it's on the actor and how she portrayed Alana, mm-hmm. and the other part is the choices they made for changing like how Alana is portrayed in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because I view movie Alana a lot better than I do play Alana, because play Alana sucks. Like, she's terrible. But like that's kind of how the play works. But in the movie, like, it gives a lot more context to like how she is as a character, and the actress does like you said, like, she just wants to be a part of something. So she doesn't come, it's not like she's like beating people over the head with her viewpoints on like, oh, we should do this or whatever, and just like pushes things to like what she's trying to do. She's trying to make good choices in this movie, and like the actress does a great job of like conveying that. Like, she does like such an amazing job.
What do you think?
No, I 100% agree. They actually had the space to give her character the opportunity to breathe. It's a redirect where in the stage production, it is literally, she feels like she's 100% fake.
She's
attention grabbing. It's, I have to be in charge of everything because it'll look good on my college record. And it's the trope overachiever, like, he was my best friend. Like, we were acquaintances, but, you know, we did this book report in seventh grade, and he did this it was Huck Finn, and, you know, he changed the name, and, like, you know, but I'm really sad.
You know, it's amazing. Like, they both have that same line, roughly, but, like, movie line, just, like, you yeah. like believe that she's not trying to be fake about it as much.
Because her, so they gave with in giving her a new song, in having a couple additional conversations with Evan before the end of Act One, she has space to just breathe as a character.
Yeah,
it gives her context, it fleshes her out, and it makes you see when choices are made farther along in the movie, why she does what she does and what she's trying to say. So she gains additional empathy, but you start to understand choices that are made where in the musical, the straight stage musical, it seems like they're made because it's, oh, I have to do this and people need to know and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's maybe I can help people feel not so alone. And it's no longer just about being a part of something, but it's
helping people.
It's helping people, which is a big part of what the stage musical originally aimed to do with their dialogue.
Whose dialogue?
The dialogue of the musical on the stage?
Just in general.
Yeah.
I really do like the ability that this particular actress has in portraying just her role in the overall, like, grand scheme of it. It seems like, especially with the addition of that song, The Anonymous Ones, it really does kind of lay a much more, I guess palatable seems to be a key word for today, but a palatable understanding of her character, you know, and creating that, you know, connection with, she's not just this overachiever. She just blends in because this is part of how she blends in. This is how she disappears into the background, you know, by doing these things and masking and coping. And there's even like a scene where her and Evan have this conversation of like, you know, what do you take? And Evan looks at her and she goes, I'll go first. And she lists off the different prescriptions that she has, the medications that she's on. And he tells his, and it creates this like, oh, you know, I even turned to Spencer and I'm like, I'm on one of those. And
I was on one of them too, which I was like, I'm not on the other one, but I was on that one. And I was like, you start noticing when it's the recognition of that. As much as she feels alone and she knows it, it's easy to recognize somebody else in the same position and then to not be ashamed of it.
Yeah.
Because that was her other thing where her tics in juxtaposition across from Ben Platt, her tics, if you're watching her, are minute, but they are bubbling below the surface the entire time. Mm-hmm. And you feel them at a base level, which for the stage performance is not there at all.
No.
And so it gives her space to, like, it gives space for the character to breathe.
Well, and even as the film rounds out that third act with her and Evan and everything that happens, even in those interactions, those like confrontations between her and Evan, it makes it so much more believable because she's not coming at it from like, well, you know, you're messing with the way I'm being seen in the world. Whatever. Like, it didn't seem like it was an imposition on her in the movie. It felt like there was a true moment of distress, and it seemed genuine, to be quite frank. Like, I really do feel like she was a very solid part of the film. And talking about like solid parts, like the family aspects, Amy Adams and Danny Pino, who play the parents of Cynthia Murphy and Larry, which in this one, they actually play... he's the stepfather. He's not the actual father, whereas in the actual musical, it is the real... I believe it's the real father, isn't it?
It's the... So for...
Or the biological father.
The biological father in stage production is... Yeah, biological father and mother, they're still together. But for the movie, they had felt that having lost the biological father at an early age could help maybe create some additional tension or
moments of connection.
Moments of connection between the stepdad or the problems that he was having with Connor.
I really feel like that moment of connection between the stepdad role for the father and his almost longing for wishing to have been more for Connor. I feel like that was a really smart choice. In my personal opinion, I felt like it was a really smart choice to create that, because in a perfect family, obviously all the parents are still there, but I think adding that actor to play a stepfather role, it just added another step in that whole area of tension between the family dynamic and points of breaking, I guess you could say, because it does come back up in the film at some of the higher points for arguments and whatnot about his role and his consideration of his role in Connor's life. So I really do think that it was a unique and good choice personally to make that switch in this film. Amy Adams, who played the mother, you're not really a big fan of Amy Adams.
I mean, I like, okay, so let's talk about movie musicals, you guys, from Disney.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so there's nothing wrong with Amy Adams as a person. Her Lois is not my Lois. That's okay. I've come to accept her. Her brief stint on The Office is always one of my favorites. Thank you for the booze cruise. But so when it comes to this, and now Eddie's like, wait a minute, what? Secret information about The Office and Amy Adams. Let us go check. Look, intern Amy knows something. So in regards to this, she did Enchanted with James Marsden, not Jason Marsden, because the difference, one is Max from a Goofy movie and one is Teddy from Westworld. So it was basically a live version of a traditional princess story. And Amy Adams, while she can sing, it was very cloying. And I appreciate that she is able to do it. Also, it had music from Stephen Schwartz, who did the music for Wicked. So when we talk about theater, I'm like, yes, my friend, let us talk. But the thing is that it was hard for me, because she always seems to be, and it might just be the way her eyes look, she always seems to be in a state of slight crying, like she's right on the cusp of it. So you don't know if she's happy or not, because she looks like she might just wet in her cheeks.
So this was the perfect role for her, is what you're saying.
Yes, I know. She's lovely. Like, I feel she's a lovely person. It was uncomfortable for me. And she did a great job in being... And I have gripes, so I need to hold on to that gripe. She did a great job in being this particular type of mom and filling the role that Cynthia Murphy, Connor's mom, plays in the stage version as well. We'll talk about my gripes and things that I thought that were missing from that. But the guy that played stepdad, he did solid. They did take out a song that's in there. Mm-hmm. Called To Break in a Glove,
yeah,
which is talking about this missed opportunity with Connor, that they had bought he had bought him a baseball glove. He used to love to play catch. He thought maybe they get back into it, but he didn't do that. He left the tag on, left the bag, the glove in the bag, and then he basically talks Connor through this entire song about how to do it right. It might not be the easy thing, but it's the right thing, and that's how you break in a glove. And it's this not very thinly veiled way that sometimes even the hard things, you have to do the hard things because it's the right thing to do and you should do it. And so they balanced it really well without having to have the song in there by his performance as Larry Murphy. Which,
to be honest, I don't know if that actor is a strong singer. I mean, he did well in his parts, like for Requiem, the Requiem song. Mm-hmm. He did well in that. But so I kind of want to tiptoe back to your gripes about Amy Adams. You were saying something else about her performance playing the mom. There were issues that you had. I'm interested.
Is this gripe land?
Oh, I'm actually interested in what your issues were. I don't
have my glasses. I can't push them up and give a deep, like, methodical sigh.
Just mime it.
Just mime it. Oh, there you go. Oh, and she adjusts the glasses. Because I only know of the one performance. I don't know all the different nuanced performances by the different people who have played
the moms.
Connor's moms. But
the moms,
but
the moms. It's also why I have a little bit of a struggle with Julianne Moore, and it's nothing.
We'll get into Julianne Moore in a second.
I mean, I can't talk one without the other, because my gripe actually comes to the moms across the board in this movie, and how they kind of did them dirty.
I see what you're saying.
So I can't really talk about my gripe about
Amy
without talking about the collective moms.
So, okay. Well, let me just jump into Julianne.
Collective moms. Collective
moms. That's like a superhero legion in like Marvel or something.
It better be at this point. Come on, Image. I see you.
So, talking about Julianne Moore,
I crush on her.
I crush on her hugely. Like, I think she's phenomenal. I think she's a great actress. I know she's done some really hokey films, but still, she's just...
That's all I know her from, hokey films.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's got to be... It's great, now I'm heading to IMDb.
Speaking of, was I correct about Amy Adams in The Office?
Oh, yeah, yeah, Boosters. Yeah.
And I called it out on the episode and everything. Look at me go.
So here's the thing about Amy Adams for me.
Yes, Spencer, talk to me.
I was expecting, you know, the nonsense with Ben Platt. Like, I was expecting nonsense to come from his character. Mm. I was not expecting Amy Adams with her nearly crying, like, all every the 5 minutes. I'm like, no. Like, I can't deal with, like, both of these people at the same dang time. Like she... I liked her in this, and it was, like, between the two of them, it was, like, a lot of just an emotional tug of war. Of, like, Ben Platt pulling me through with social anxiety, and then Amy Adams pulling me with, like, a mother who just lost her son, and she's, like, trying to reach out and find something to anchor herself with.
Yep. I mean, Amy Adams did, like, pretty great in, like, American Hustle, and she was in Her. She was the best friend to...
She's a good egg. Like, there again, it's just this one, she looked like, and consistently since she's been in Superman, she looks like she's about to cry. Even as Lois Lane, she looked like she's about to cry.
Well, Clark? Of course, Clark? She's in like one of my... So she's in one of my favorite sci-fi films, Arrival, which she's great in that.
And she
one.
Looked like she was going to cry that entire movie, too, which is its brilliant movie, though.
She was. Did you see her in Big Eyes? The one that was
the one that's based on the artist. Or, mm-hmm. No, but I have a feeling one. She looks like she might want to cry in that one too.
It's called really, Big Eyes.
I mean, the story for that artist is so nuts. Yeah. Okay, but you want to talk about Julianne Moore?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because the first thing I saw her in, hysterically enough, was The Big Lebowski. Hey, and then I remember her being. And it sounds really weird. She's in the Hunger Games trilogy, and then the other one that I remember was she's the villain in the second Kingsman movie.
She's only in the last two Hunger Games.
She's still in the Hunger Games franchise. It counts. Yeah.
The Lost World. I mean, did anybody see her in The Lost World, Jurassic Park?
I think I mentally edited her out of that movie.
How could you? Like, she's like, the best
you said
part.
That, and I was like, I don't remember her being in that movie
she
at all.
She was in Boogie Nights.
Nope. Oh,
like, I remember her in, we talked about this recently for some reason, but in that Plane movie where she had a daughter and then, like, or a kid of some sort, and then, like, they, like, kidnapped the kid on the plane.
That's not her. That's Jodie Foster.
That's Jodie Foster.
Oh, whatever.
It's okay. Confused. It's okay. You're good, though. I was like, wait a minute.
Wait a second.
It's taken on a plane. And it's like, we need you to unlock this plane or we're going to fly it to wherever, blah, blah, blah. Jodie Foster's like, yes, but secretly I'm Julianne Moore.
Was that flight plan?
I think it's flight or flight plan, yeah. But I remember because I was like, this is trippy. This is a trippy movie. It's okay.
But the thing is, Julianne Moore, so great actress in my mind. I know for you two, this is your first viewing
of
her.
In your mind.
But the thing is, though, is that I really do feel like her performance in doing the song that makes you cry,
the U-Haul song.
U-Haul song. You call it the U-Haul song. I looked it up as the U-Haul song. I couldn't find it.
It's not the U-Haul.
It's called like the big, the small, or something. It's like no.
So it's like so there's big,
no U-Haul
so small.
In the title. It's just in the song.
So here's the thing. She actually says in her version for the movie, a U-Haul truck in the driveway.
Yeah, she did say that.
Instead of in the stage production where it's a moving truck in the driveway.
A moving truck, no.
Hence why I'm like, it's the U-Haul song now.
But I stop. But the fact that she sings it.
And she sings it.
And she sings it. And she acts it. It's pretty moving stuff. Like, to be quite honest, that scene, that song, mind you, it impacts you, Amy, more than it impacts me. But I still, like... acknowledge the fact that it's moving. That song,
there was a grown man beside me that was legitimately like I know the song forwards and backwards, and if I want to cry, we can make me cry. Don't you play it. I hear your brain.
I wasn't going to do nothing.
But there was a gentleman like three seats over who had jumped down one row to sit next to his girl. He is balled up, like scrunched down into the seat. He's got the feet all the way extended, and you just hear... and then you hear crinkle, 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 and he's like rubbing his eyes. And then you but and it was loud enough over the entire score that I could hear this man clearly. And then when it finished, there was sobbing and the sniffling everywhere else. And I was like, everyone suffer with me. Everyone. You all song.
But she does a great job. I mean, and her, mind you, Julianne Moore is not known for her singing, but the rawness in that scene, her earnestness in the song and it impacting her and her whole, like her whole self embodying that role of the single mom who has to keep going on. I bought it, like, you know, hook, line and sinker. So yeah. I don't know, going to, this is the transition into your gripes. Here's I'm interested in knowing it what your my, gripes are seeing as
here's the gripes.
Okay.
It's me.
Go Ta-da. Ahead. Go ahead.
I don't know. They usually have a theme song for random things.
No, we so, don't do that here. Sorry.
Unfortunately, you did it while I did my theme yeah. song about grapes underneath things. So, this movie, when it comes to things that were really frustrating for me, the moms as a whole, the movie does them pretty dirty. Coming from the perspective of a mom and seeing the stage production, there's a song that's at the beginning of the musical that gives space for you to understand coming in that these are two different moms. They're in two different spaces. One of them's married. One of them's divorced. They're doing the best that they can, but they don't know exactly like where to go from here, how to reach their kids. And it's, you know, Cynthia, Amy Adams' character, is dealing with Connor, just trying to connect, just being like, I'm doing everything I can for him. We're going to get it connected. It's going to be great. And then in the reverse, you have Heidi, who is Evan's mom. And she's doing the exact same thing. She's doing everything she can to keep him afloat, to empower him, to be strong, to encourage him through these things. And it's just not working. The song is, does anybody have a map? And the movie does not. So there was a big complaint from a lot of people that love the stage show. They're saying that it was taken out. It's not. It's actually in there, but it's like super on the low, which I thought was funny. Anyway, that song sets up the space for you to recognize that the moms, they're not perfect, but they're trying, and all they want to do is connect with their kids.
Yeah.
Immediately taking it out, and then the first time that we meet Cynthia Murphy, Amy Adams, is in the office with her husband for the... Connor has died, and we start seeing this almost a bit on that delusion, disbelief, every like small miracles everywhere type of vibe that becomes very, I understand everybody moves through their grief differently, which she keeps trying to point out to everybody. She's like, everybody grieves differently. Yes, I got you. But the way that it's played makes her almost like completely out of touch with reality as a whole, with her family, with everything. And then on the flip side, we have Heidi, who is busting her butt doing everything she can. And without that first song to give the space that she's actively trying to connect with Evan, she looks like she's like, I'm working. I don't have time for you. I'm working. I don't have time for you. Like, no. Back off. So the only space that we get that she actively cares is in the U-Haul song. And the problem is that for me as a mom, I connect on both of those levels and I understand both of their perspectives, but taking out that initial song takes away the power of the moms to act, to give them more empathy, to round their characters out in a way that says, look, they're not the best. They love their kids. They're trying, and they've actively been trying.
Yeah.
And so when we start seeing the confrontation for Heidi and Evan, it makes Julianne Moore's character look like she's absolute, just like she's disconnected from a bad mom.
Like she's disconnected from Evan's whole world.
Like, and that it doesn't matter. Yeah. And then, so when you get that song, when you get
the one at the beginning,
when you get the U-Haul song,
oh,
suddenly it's like she's always cared and she's always been there. And if you're anybody else, it would be like, suddenly my mom cares. Like, yeah. if you didn't know, which was not, and this is not an issue of Julianne Moore playing a bad role.
No, not at all.
And that is not my gripe. My gripe is that they did both of these mothers collectively dirty, yeah, because they made Amy. Well, they wrote this... Amy Wet Eye Adams. So sorry.
Wet Eye Adams? Is this some kind of secret?
We need to send her a plaque on that.
Amy Wet Eye Adams.
She's another Amy. But so
I see what you're saying, though. Yeah. It's the way they wrote the moms in this particular, mm-hmm, film, because I do agree. In the musical, at the very beginning, it sets the tone, because that song begins. So in the beginning of the musical, you get kind of the foundation setting for both Heidi and Evan, and then the Murphys.
Yeah.
And you get like their breakfast settings, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, Evan's having trouble writing the letter. They have this this interaction where the mom's like, "Hey, did you write the letter?" It seems more,
yeah, like, she's trying.
Yeah, and then the situation at the Murphy's house where the mom's trying, the dad's kind of obtuse, but he's that atypical dad in that sense in that scene. And it also gives kind of the opportunity to kind of create the litmus test that we should be judging the rest of the movie by, in terms of the dynamic between mom and Connor, mm-hmm, as well as mom and Evan.
Yep.
You know, you're using that as the, okay, this is the baseline. You know, this is what their relationship looks like in the normal sense, yep, quote unquote.
But well, before there's any trauma, before, yeah, it amps, exactly, up to 11, because, yeah, then it creates the space where we don't see Amy Adams having any, even like, you don't get the space to see her trying to interact with her son. We, yeah, meet her son, and that's it. And then suddenly we meet her, and she seems almost like she's the wishy-washy, delusional.
Well, that's because the movie kind of makes a point that she is that at certain points without like enforcing how much she, yeah, actually cares.
Well, I think the emphasis in the film is to establish that mom likes to stay in these trends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which what you were saying earlier kind of hit it right on the head, Amy, in that the whole stage, that like staying in that long stage of denial is her trend, yep, in this season. They make a really obvious point to point that out in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in the stage show, they bring it up, but they do not, they don't put it as, it's handled in such a way that after we meet her and she's lost Connor, her, don't you see this is his best friend, that space where she meets, it's this renewed hope. So it comes almost in this sense of clingy desperation.
Yeah.
And it no longer comes into, it's a fad.
Yeah.
So it builds in such a almost an organic way on, yeah, stage. Well, because that it makes her human in, yeah, like, that's, she's in, yes, she's in denial, but it's not a trend, it's not a fad, it's not her going, oh, you know, my son is alive because, yeah, you're here, Evan.
Well, the musical does a really great job of showing that she already had a lost relationship with Connor even before Connor left, even before Connor passed away, that there was a struggle still at that time for mom to have a relationship with Connor. And so when you see everything else that follows after that particular part of the play, you then see, like, no, mom, you never had that. Like, as an audience member, you're like, I didn't see that at the beginning either. And you have the audience who is on board with the outside perspective of, like, yeah, this isn't realistic. Whereas in this case, there's a sense of gray area as to at what point in time Connor did or didn't have that relationship with his mom, and the things that she's clinging to, we don't know as the audience, like, how far out that is in terms of disconnect from the most recent case of incidences. So it creates that gray area for people who don't know the musical to say, well, okay, well, mom may have a point, or mom may have this, when in fact, as we who know the musical are say, we obviously can say, oh, you know, no, this is just another stage of denial. This is still in that trend. This is her trying, but we know the truth as outside perspectives.
Well, and also it drove more of a home or a point home that the dad, because he's still the dad, he's the sane one. He's the one that you should be believing. He's the one that seems logical. Yeah, he doesn't cry because he's a man. Like, they pushed that, but it was easier, which was very frustrating to me, on a musical that's based on the relationship between a parent and their child, and in this case, mothers to sons, that the emphasis was so strongly put that on the mom. The dad is the one that we should believe. Like, the tough love, there was no grace, or there was no additional care for Cynthia and Connor's relationship.
Yeah.
It was, and in doing what they did, they took out a big section or a big heart, like a big chunk of the musical that made that relation, that underlying story so special, because it's not just about the struggles for mental illness. It's not just about feeling alone. It's not just Evan's walk, and it's not just the impact of what happens with Evan. It's also a look at the relationships for moms and their kids that are moving through these scenarios, and how do they support them, and how do they help them, and can they? And it was super disheartening that they did the moms dirty. So that's my largest complaint.
And your smallest?
They took out anybody I haven't met. So my smallest complaint, it's not really small, but it's a lot smaller than the moms. It would be and I think Spencer can talk even more of this, the Animorph like opportunities of Senor Platt through multiple shots. Like, Spencer, you feeling me?
Yeah. Okay. So, like, I don't know what was happening with he was on, but like, there are certain scenes where, you know, Ben Platt, like, you know, looks like he's in high school. Okay, but then other scenes where I'm like, why did he look like he aged 10 years in 5 minutes? It was very bizarre, and I'm not quite sure how A, this happened, B, they let that go through. They're probably like, I can't fix this.
They're like, look, I tried. I can't age him down. He's not Chris Evans. I mean, I saw it happen like three times during the It'll Be Us sequence. So when Evan and Zoe finally decide that they're going to take an opportunity to be together as a couple, he goes, they start the scene initially where they've had Ben Platt or Evan in the background. So he looks young, like he still looks younger, like he's spaced proportionately. And then when we get into singing, suddenly you realize this is a very tall man. And this girl looks like a teenager. And you're like, whoa, bro. And then suddenly they're singing and like the height shifts or the shot shifts. And like, they go to a close-up and he's like, okay, he looks like a teenager. And then they go back out and it's both of them singing together, holding each other's arms. And I was like, nope. And then they sit down on the bed, like they sit down on the bed to kiss, and suddenly they're both the same height. And he like, she had to sit way up there and he had to slide down or something. And suddenly he looks young and I'm like, oh Lord, it's happening.
So that is a thing. Like that's
that really is a whole lot of like Animorph situations going on.
It was, and the thing is, the director did the best that he could, because there's a good couple of scenes where he looks like he is a teenager, like he's a high schooler right towards the end of high school, which is what he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then there's the other ones who are like, nope. Mm-mm.
Yeah, there was a lot of like little interesting like decisions done in like editing. like they're not like really stand out-y, but like every so often something will pull you out just slightly. Yeah. And you're like, why was that a choice?
It's like, this looks like 2010s high school film. That looks like 1980s high school film. Okay. You know, where you had 30, 40-year-olds playing teenagers in the movie during the 80s and all that.
We'll always be together.
Yes. There you go. There you go.
You're welcome, Grace. Yeah. That was an aggressive one for me. And then I had one more, I think. So I had really hoped, and this might just be my one expectation that I didn't actually talk about. So a lot of this film especially for some of these songs, talks about the perfect day, endless sky, gorgeous green, trees everywhere.
Yeah.
There weren't enough trees for me. There wasn't enough endless sky for me.
That might be the minor gripe.
That is my wee gripey gripe. But I needed more skies forever, Spencer.
What about you, Spence? Any other issues or any even highlights? Anything that you...
No, we've talked about most of my highlights with Alana. Like, that was really my...
She
was the change of the movie that, like, I was like, good for her. That, like, they made her much better than she was.
Well, and the actress was just so good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, to be quite honest,
I have a highlight now.
Oh, okay.
I forgot. I wanted to talk about the guy who played Connor.
Yeah.
He was great. Yes. Like, and it sucks that he died because he's not in the movie much.
We needed more.
Which, by the way, in the musical, as we all know, there are several more instances where Evan has these like internal monologues with Connor, but on stage, Connor's personified by the character, obviously, the actor who actually played Connor. Mm-hmm. And they have these conversations. And those were so great because it kind of gave a little bit of the insight into the logic for Evan to keep the lie going, keep everything alive. Because essentially Connor was saying what Evan was wanting to hear. But it created that really cool dialogue. Not to mention the song Sincerely Me that they do is one of the best numbers in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm. And in the musical too. Like it got even better on the film. I was like, okay, you're doing the exact same dance. And now we're adding different locations. Brilliant.
Yeah, it was like that song was amazing. And I really did like it.
I think I have to agree with you, Spence. I really wish there was more of that performance.
And Jared.
And Jared to an extent.
He did good. So they shifted him from being
a slight antagonist.
The Jewish cousin / slight antagonist. Yeah, you're right.
To the most ridiculous but brilliant
friend of the family. Yeah.
It's like family friend of a friend. He was the quip that you needed. He was still light enough. There wasn't any like bad pushing of buttons. Mm-hmm. It was more...
Which is in the musical.
Yeah. He carried a lot more comedic relief. And so we're like, okay, I like you a little bit. You cute.
I really feel like this movie could have been more, in all honesty. I felt like making it into... So as to whether or not the question of whether or not it should have been adapted, I feel like everything out there should have an opportunity to try to become adapted. And this is one of those things where, if done right, could become something really monumental because it was such an impactful musical. You take a lot of the key elements and you condense it into something that can fit in the, 16:9 aspect ratio and everything like that. Like you make it work and it's feasible. I don't know if everything they wanted to get translated was able to be translated with all the things that we've mentioned so far in terms of gripes, minor gripes, even subtle highlights.
More trees.
Like, I don't know if Alana and Connor could have carried the movie all by themselves, but
yes.
I personally would have probably liked to have seen the guy who played Connor play Evan, and the girl who played Alana play Zoe. I don't know. I just, that would have been a really interesting shift for me. It would have been fun to see that. I'm not to say that the actress who played Zoe wasn't good. She was good, but I don't know how much more highly we can speak about that actress who played Alana, because she was just
Amanda.
We'll do it again. She's great.
Amanda something.
Amanda. Yeah. Amanda. It looks literally like
Amanda Stenberg.
The diversity in casting is always a great thing. Yeah. The Zoe that was in here, she wasn't bad.
She wasn't bad.
She held up. She did the part. She did what was kind of expected of her for that role. She didn't bring additional depth. She played it pretty close to book.
Yeah.
And vocally as well.
That is actually very true. It was very close to the musical in terms of like sound. There was nothing really Yeah, that's
and that was true. The thing that even the guy that played Connor, he had a little more chutzpah when he coming through for Sincerely Me, even for and for his last song, which was totally unexpected.
Yeah.
There was suddenly, and again, there was some depth. This is, I stated prior, this is not the stage production. The resolution that comes to in the movie is actually based on the novelization.
Yeah.
And what they decide to do with it to reach a more, I can't say well-rounded. I think it was kind of like a bit of a, I have to make this right type of thing instead of I've learned.
It's almost like the community service aspect of it kind of thing, you know, not to go too deep into what,
even though one of my favorite books ended up showing up on that list. So, hey, Ready Player One, I see you.
So wrapping this up, I did want to ask, you know, a question to the table. And that question is, you know, how closely should we expect to see more of these types of adaptations parallel their stage or musical counterparts? We've seen in certain instances where, obviously, with books, you can only, you know, steer so closely in terms of parallel and in terms of all the major hit points, but not fully. And they're doing a really good job of balancing that right now. I mean, if there's ever a clear indication of that, we can look at like what Marvel's doing with comic books, and they're really kind of nailing down that formula. But now when you get into areas like with musicals and making those adaptations, I think one of the best elements of comparison would be the Disney film of Into the Woods, which unfortunately wasn't that great.
Yep. Oh, I'm on that boat. Don't worry. And this is not because I hate anybody in particular. Meryl Streep, I love you, but please don't rap.
What?
You have to see the movie.
The witch in Into the Woods, originally played by Bernadette Peters, she has a rapping sequence at the beginning. Thank you, Mr. Stephen Sondheim. We appreciate you and all the gifts you've given to us. Amen. So,
I was like, this sounds like a prayer. Oh,
it is a prayer. It's a prayer. But the movie, so the Disney movie version, while it does hold very close to the book and it does amazing things with the scenery and everything else, it is just it's a
you hear that? It's a mm-mm. There you go.
Okay.
And
that's a horizontal mm-mm, not a vertical mm-mm.
Nope, it's a uh-uh. So to answer your question,
yeah,
this is a non-related to this podcast gripe. There are locked away in many a vault, and I swear the only conspiracy theory that I prescribe to is this. There are so many shows that have been filmed much akin to Hamilton, where they filmed the stage production, and people are sitting on them, hoarding them, waiting to slowly kind of distribute them at their time. And it's very frustrating as a theater person, because the experience on stage is so wonderful. And even being able to be at home and watch a taped version, you feel the intent. You see how that director for that production wanted it to be told. It's an experience.
Kind of like with Shrek the Musical or with Hamilton.
Or with Into the Woods or with West Side Story. Yeah. Like, or Puffs. Like, we can go on. There's a cornucopia of them. And sometimes in the adaptation, when it goes for movie musical, you lose a lot of the magic that happens on stage. Mm. Where if watching a taped version or a bootleg version, if you will, of Evan Hansen on stage impacts you differently than what you saw.
We don't condone piracy, by the way, on this podcast. Just so
if
everybody knows.
I can't say that I know. This is self-incriminating. There is. Oh, I know, but this is like.
She's already 2 feet in. Just let her dive.
Wee! You don't dive. I'm not doing a pencil dive. That's wrong. sorry, 2 feet in, just dive. So that's anyway. Swimmer. So there's a history of experiencing the stage production. If you cannot afford a ticket, by watching a taped version of it, and it's something that carries so much magic that watching a film musical adaptation does not always hit in the right spots. There is The artistry, the work that's taken by the cast, it is, people try really hard to nail parts. And if the one gift or the one request that I could ever have for somebody is, if you have the opportunity to go support theater, please do it. Whether it is you're a professional, you're local, a national tour, you get an opportunity to go to Broadway, anything. Theater is a dying art, and the people that are on the stage are working a million times harder to have someone understand that the twitch from their arm on stage, and you are in the very, very bleachers in the very, very back of the house, you not only see, but you feel that impact. And sometimes when we take an actor who has found comfort in being in that type of space and put them in a film, it does not hit the right notes because of the way it's translated. So should we expect that moving forward, movie musicals are going to either take over or the stage production should be turned into movie musicals? I really don't think so. And I'll be very honest, I see them more often than not either trying to do one of two things. Either it's a cash grab, mm-hmm. and most of the time it is. Let's be very honest. Thank you, Beauty and the Beast, also by this director. Achoo, I saw you. Or the other one is they want to be able to get the story to as many people as possible, and they know they do not have the means to do it any other way. And with Dear Evan Hansen, I can't honestly say that it's the latter, because it feels like it might have been the first.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the intent of the original actors was. And yeah. That hurts my heart.
Spencer, I don't know how you're going to top that, but by all means.
I'm sorry.
Spencer's going to be like, nope, next.
It was eight.
Yeah, well, like, really, you said it so eloquently. It really doesn't mean, like, you know, intent of people. Like, should we expect them to be close to the original? They're probably not going to be, because, like, it's easier if, like, you know, they just branch out and do their own thing, kind of in, like, this movie, like, how they made, like, slight tweaks and changes for the better, but then they also accidentally made some changes for the worse because of time. I kind of think we're going to just end up in this land where, like, it's, or I will at least hopefully will end up in this land, where, like, it's a mix of, like, we're trying to make it better and make more sense for, like, you know, a movie adaptation. And so they make changes, and then they're like, oh, we need to cut something, and they're going to cut something they probably shouldn't have, and then, you know, we'll end up where, like, it's a bit lopsided. So I feel like lopsided movie musical adaptations are where we're going to end up.
I agree. I think this is going to be a battle between two different sides. The one side who says, oh, well, we have to get it to everybody, and this is the only way how, and so we're going to proceed by X, Y, and Z, i.e. giving us, like, products such as this or Into the Woods, things like that. And that will be only combated against by those, like yourself, Amy, people who are pure to the art of theater and recognizing that if a type of performance is being given to the world, let's give it a proper stage, you know, in any sense of the way, you know, stage in air quotes. It's unfortunate because of the fact that when I first saw Dear Evan Hansen, it moved me in the musical. It moved me. I was in tears. I cried. I was sitting there in a pool of blubbering mess, just trying to not connect as hard as I was connecting with a lot of the aspects of the musical. In this movie, I was seeing kind of like the Cliff Note version of that connection, trying to put the director trying to put me in places to feel those things that were genuinely manufactured in the musical, but kind of trying haphazardly fabricated in this movie. And I think it kind of cheats a bit. It cheats the musical, it cheats the original content, it cheats the original intentions of the musical, and I think it's if there are more of them out there like us who want to make sure that if you want to experience the things that our parents experienced or the things that we experienced or we want those other people in the future to experience, we need to invest in those things. We need to invest in your local theaters, invest in the road productions, you know, of different, you know, different shows. You know, we got Hamilton coming through here in Sacramento.
Right now, it's literally. We also even have a shout out to Sacramento in Dear Evan Hansen, which showed up on stage and in the movie. So it's like, hey, weirdo me.
I feel like this is kind of part of our responsibility as people who know the truth. Because I know preparing for this conversation, there was a lot of different reviews I had to sift through and try to see where everybody else was at. And one of the biggest things was just consistently cutting down the elements of the story. And the thing is that the true heart of this story is actually very beautiful and beautifully done in the musical, with all the correct parts added to it. The movie, although adding some really wonderful parts, i.e. like the character background for Alana and the musical inclusion of the anonymous ones and Connor's song at the end, I feel like those were incredible. And I would like to see almost like a redux version of the stage play with those added into it. But I really do hope that there is enough earnest gripes, to use a word that has been used, so one of our keywords for today, earnest gripes that really do resonate with the creators of our future and the future of our entertainment, to hear we don't need to have this changed so that we can see it here. We need people to support those elements of where they come from so that people who are used to seeing it in theaters can go and see it on the stage. You know, and I think that's kind of where Hamilton really did a really great job of, you know, having Shrek the Musical on Netflix really kind of conjure up that desire to want to see that in on stage. So I really hope that we don't see much more of these types of adaptations.
They'll keep showing up, but less would be preferable.
Yeah. So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. I want to start with Spence. Spence, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Yeah, the movie passes for me. I complained a lot about it, but it like just comes from a place of like not being able to handle the social awkwardness. So if you can handle social awkwardness in like movies or real life, like you'll probably find this a lot more enjoyable than someone like me. So for me, I'm going to give it 3.5 monocles.
What about you, Amy?
So I'm not going to say begrudgingly, but this film does pass for me.
Mm-hmm. Begrudgingly is a good word to use.
I don't want to be like, oh, it's a musical, so I have to like it.
Oh, I see what you mean.
That's, yeah. So it does pass for me. While I do have some gripes, hashtag more trees, please. The story is still there. The earnesty and sincerity of the performances are still there. And down at its core, you will find yourself choking up in an unexpected place throughout this movie, whether it's the first time you've seen it via stage or pirating or otherwise.
Again, we don't condone piracy.
We don't. They're driving me nuts. So when it comes down to it, please go ahead and support your local theater, but take the opportunity to also go and support filmmakers and the actors who are making efforts to bring great stories to the screen. This is a 3.5.
Okay.
Adam.
I think I'm in the same boat as Amy. I as a movie reviewer, objectively looking at this, I do have to say the film does pass. I feel like this movie does its best efforts to try to create that element of what Magic the musical originally created. I think it earnestly does, but its execution kind of falls a little short in that aspect. In terms of monocles, I am going to kind of go right down the middle and give it a 2.5. I feel like there's a lot of good that could have been done with this film. There's a lot more that could have been done with this film. But I just feel like those kind of parts are kind of long gone. And we're not going to get a road show variation or an off-Broadway variation of this movie. So that's what we get. So I'm going to give it a 2.5 out of 5. So yeah. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlossophers. Again, you can check us out on all podcast streaming apps such as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Pandora, Spotify, anywhere where you listen to podcasts. Also, you can check us out on our website at filmlossophers.com. We got over 280 episodes. Check them out. We got something for everybody, including musicals. As
it was July. Spencer found it. It was July of last year. We're like, no, no.
Ah, see, I told you guys. I wasn't there for some reason. I don't know. I think it was sick. Who knows?
You could be green with envy later.
Ah, I see what you did there. That was the title of the episode. Yeah. So check it out. We got a lot of stuff for everybody. So, yeah. Again, I want to thank Amy for being on the show this week. Having her area of expertise and her kind of going toe-to-toe with thoughts on the musical aspect and all that with me was great. And I appreciate her bringing her knowledge. So,
and yet I lack donuts and tea. So I'm going to hear about this tomorrow.
I didn't say anything, Spencer. Oh,
okay, what?
Did I say anything during this episode about donuts?
I don't know anything about anything that's happening right now.
Okay.
He's ready for donuts and tea.
There you go. Like I said, this wraps up another great episode. And if you get the chance, check out this film for yourself. It's going to be in theaters this Friday. It will be in pretty much most theaters around the country. So if you get a chance, check it out. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this because it is a very polarizing film. And it is going to be creating a lot of different conversations for a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. And if you have a unique perspective, we'd love to hear it. Drop us a line on our social pages, facebook.com/filmlossophers. Or on Twitter and Instagram at Filmlossophy101. We appreciate you listening, and we hope we hear from you soon, and we hope that you join us next week. So, from all of us here at The Filmlossophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm theater intern Amy.
Class dismissed.